Hey there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 499, the 499th edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. We have a wonderful show lined up for you today. I'm trying to do a couple little things at once. I'm here. Steve's not really here right now, but we're going to pretend he is. I actually have a little gargoyle sitting on the desk. Unfortunately, Steve was called away because we have pretty much everything that can possibly happen in the course of a family year or whatever you want to call it. It is happening at once. We have a funeral to go to tomorrow. We have a possible birth in the family, not my immediate family, but still. We have a possible birth in the family that's coming up. It should be a little bit later on. I mean, there's just so many different things. We have all these different announcements that were going to happen, and real life got in the way. So I have a stand-in, and the only reason that I have a stand-in here tonight, the fun little gargoyle whose actual and real name is Larry. You won't find that anywhere else. Larry is here because I'm actually setting up and doing a test video for the podcast. So I'm practicing looking at the camera. I have all the lighting done up. It actually took me 2 hours to set up all the cameras and make sure everything was actually done right. And just because a microphone looks pretty in a certain place doesn't mean that it's actually functional. So we're doing a whole test with the audio and with everything else. So the audio for the video is going to be slightly less optimal than compared to what the audio that we usually record for the audio portion of the Caffeination podcast. But still, I mean, that's a whole bunch of stuff that if we actually manage to get the video out for this show, it'll be practice for next show. So that's what I'm trying to do. There's a lot of workflow stuff that has to happen to make the Caffeination an actual functioning video and audio thing. And trust me, I have a face and a basement built for radio, so it took a little bit of a prettying up to make this and this happened, pointing to everything else. My face and all the wild and woody goodness that we got for the walls as well. So, I mean, it's going to be a fun little episode here for the Caffeination 499. It's sponsored by myself because we ain't got no sponsors anymore for right now. We're working on that. Not for 499. Who knows? Maybe episode 500 will have something going on. But we're calling this the Almost There edition because we are really almost there. And there's been a quote that's actually been out there on a couple of the subtitles for the Caffeination for the past couple weeks, and it says, "We're all here because we're not all there tonight." And it's a quote from an Aerosmith song. Aerosmith just happens to be one of my absolute favorite bands ever, and that quote has described my mental state over the past couple weeks, I gotta tell you. So I was getting together a whole bunch of statistics. Yeah, if I could actually talk, it might help. I was getting together a whole bunch of statistics for the Caffeination, how long all the episodes would take if it was end-to-end. Just a little bit of a spoiler, it would take 13 and a half days to play every single Caffeination. That's 100 and, you know, 100% me all the time up until we had Steve here. So, you know, it's, and I keep pointing to the gargoyle on the video, and that's actually kind of starting to weird me out. But you know what, Steve's here in spirit, so Larry's gonna be Steve for the night. Alright, if you are looking for this podcast and you're confused about everything that I'm talking about, then you can head on over to www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. It is the wonderful place where you can find all of the caffeinated goodies and all of the high-octane technology news that you can shake a stick at. Which I actually had a stick around here somewhere to shake, and then I don't know where it went. So that's why this is the dress rehearsal, and you know, that's what we're just trying to do here. So it's almost there. We have a ton of Geekcraft to talk about. A little bit of food and caffeinated bits. I found a new website that I've been looking at for some content, and they got some really really fun stuff going on there. So we have that. It's going to be interesting. This show, I didn't want to give away too much, so I didn't want to tip my hand or tip my hat, as the case may be, because I had so much fun stuff planned for next week. So, you know, if you have any audio comments, feedback, suggestion, this week more than ever, if you have anything that you'd like to have included on the Caffeination podcast, please send it in to caffeination@gmail.com. We already have one or two audio comments that we are going to be playing. Any testimonials, written things, things you've enjoyed, things you hated. Do you consider this the love you hate you line for everything that's ever happened on the Caffeination podcast? That's 5.5 years of interesting stuff that you can and cannot mention. And the funny thing about this, next week's episode is going to be held over at live.caffeination.com. If you happen to show up at 9:30 Eastern Daylight Time on September 7th, 2011, you will see it. And you can interact. So now that I'm going to have Steve here, it's going to be fantastic because somebody can actually watch the chat room while we're talking about the fun things that we're supposed to be talking about. So it's going to be an interactive show. We're going to try and cull down the audio episodes so that the audio that we produce after the fact and the video we produce after the fact might be a little bit different quality and might be a little bit different organization-wise from what you actually hear on the audio show. So it pays to come by to enjoy what's actually going to happen and then, you know, enjoy the audio show after the fact. So the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All of the member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational stuff, and everybody's listed over at techpodcasts.com. All right. We were supposed to do the coffee vodka preparation tonight. There's one small problem with that. I am overstocked with coffee and understocked with vodka. So it's going to have to happen off camera. Maybe we'll do a little bit of a special caffeination. I'll invite Steve over sometime over the weekend, and we'll actually make the coffee vodka with the new and improved secret recipe. It's only secret until we actually try it, because it takes a couple days to actually infuse correctly. So when we actually try it out next week live on episode 500, then you're going to be able to see all the interesting things. And yeah, since Steve's not really a coffee drinker, it's going to be kind of interesting to see what happens with that anyway. All right, so what did I do geeky this week, since we're trying to keep to the same format? I am up to my eyeballs in geek this week. Literally, it's like right there. It's like cresting above the pupils, as the case may be, mainly because the pupils are back. Yes, the students are back in Temple University, where I work during the day. It is my day gerb, and everybody's back. All the teachers are back, all the professors, all the staff is in the right places. It's just a matter of getting all the technology resources to be in the proper place and everything to function. So there's always a couple days where just everything goes wrong that can. We did this thing where we imaged the lab, basically made all the computers act the same in the lab, and I had 6 of them die. So I was able to fix 4 or 5 of them, and then, you know, 2 more would die. So it was like, it was just literally troubleshooting from start to finish this week. We got a little bit of a respite, and then we're going to head right on back in. I got all my staff in order, so this is a good time. So it's like we're right past the initial start of the semester craziness. We're going to ease off into the actual business of getting things done, and then, you know, the midterms and everything else are going to crop up. It's a really interesting and cyclical lifestyle to actually work at a university, because you are really you live and die by what the student population is doing, even though you yourself have gotten out of school, you know, or who knows, maybe you're taking some classes. But it's interesting because your life has this whole cyclical thing from what you remember when you were in school to, you know, now. It's like once you get out of school, like life's kind of one large, vacation. Whenever you want to take your vacation, you can. When you work at a college, it's not entirely the same way. So kind of like if you were a teacher in a regular school or a K-12 kind of school, it's like your life has this seasonality to it that exists beyond everything else, and it's kind of interesting. And it's at the same point, it's really kind of rough on certain points. And I was talking to one of the other guys and said, you know, there is no way to properly staff a department, because if you staff it so you have enough people so that the work never gets crazy when everything starts up and when everything ramps up, then you're overstaffed for when the times when everything lulls out. So what most places do, and what I know that Temple does, it's, you know, they staff it so that everything, you know, everybody has a good amount of stuff to do for the most part of the year, and then you just got to deal with it when it ramps up. Sorry there, Steve. And, you just got to deal with it as it ramps up, and then try and, you know, ride the wave back down into productivity. So it's been crazy to say the least. So I can't wait for things to start heading back down. You know, got the longboard out, just start cruising in, see what happens. All right, PodCamp Philly, just a quick reminder, because I'm doing this every week. PodCamp Philly is going to be October 1st and 2nd. We're going to be doing fun things there. There's going to be all kinds of different people from Philadelphia area around and beyond. So it's a great place. You know, if you live in a place that has a PodCamp, I highly suggest you actually go out there and attend. It's people who are just as crazy about this interesting medium as you are. So whether it's people who are doing the stereotypical thing like I am and actually producing from inside your basement, except it's not my parents' basement. I own the basement technically, or, you know, I have a mortgage on it. So it's not quite the same thing, but it's similar. So, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I am stereotypical in that, but unlike most other hardcore tech geeks, I actually can talk to people. I'm a people person, to quote a line from Office Space, because, you know, but there's a whole bunch of other tech people. There's people people. There's, you know, I am people. I can't even remember why we have the I'm people bumper sticker that we're thinking about doing. I think it's because everybody has people, and I'd like to be people, so I am people. So you could be my people, too. Maybe we'll do that for the Caffeination shirts that I have. Ooh, I might have said a little bit too much. We're trying to get the Caffeination shirts actually designed. I got a couple different designs that I'm actually going to bounce off Steve. Not this Steve, the real Steve, but, you know, not actually throw them at them. I'm going to show them to him, see what actually happens. But, you know, we have a couple things that are all set to jet, and I want to make sure I get everything done the right way, because I've done shirts before, and I didn't do it right, so... Do use the right tool for the job. All right, now we're going to actually dive into the real news and things this week. Now, one of the biggest news in the tech sector this week is that Steve Jobs has left Apple Computers. Now, there's a couple different reasons why this is big news. If you are an Apple fanboy, then you are upset. If you are a human and you see that the man is sick, and your heart goes out to him and his family, because the prognosis doesn't look good. That's the easiest way to say it. I don't really know what to say beyond that. So, you know, we wish him and his family well, and, you know, stranger things have happened. You know, he might just recover and come back, or he might recover and go on to live a life that's completely different from what he did at Apple. But he so changed the technology landscape over the 20 or 30 years that he was actually involved that we would be remiss if we did not mention how much of a great man he was in that aspect. And just think, like, after all of the iPods are completely out of there, after, you know, the Macs have gone their way, you know, because, like, the entire ethos behind the Apple products is that, you know, it's like, what's new this year? So what is a lasting legacy for a brilliant man when he's made, like, the products very, very sequentially obsolete? So can he look back at any one of those products and say that was a perfect product? I mean, he could look at the iPhone, he could look at the iPod. I personally think the iPod is much more of a revolution than the iPhone, but who knows? He has the Macintosh computer, he has Next computers. We actually have one of them at the university. I think it might even still be running the dictionary server, or the Webster server, but you know, there's just so many things he's done. But the funny thing is, the thing that almost nobody readily understands that he was heavily involved in, that actually is probably going to stand the test of time more than anything, is Pixar. He was on the board of directors for Pixar. He bought the company way back, you know, in the early days when they were still working on, you know, smaller films, and he helped guide the men who were in charge of Pixar back then into a healthy business relationship with the parties that they're currently working with. I mean, yes, they were bought by Disney, and there's so many other things that are actually involved, but when you really take a look at take a look at absolutely everything that Pixar has done, you can look at movies that are old and that are dated and have bad animation, and you can still see the story that shines through them, and they're still beautiful, and they're still wonderful, and they're still touching. Whereas you look at older technology things, gadgets, whatever it may be, they look... There's not very much nostalgia that's actually left in there. I mean, there's very few people who can look at the old Commodore 64 and say, hey, I'd really like to have one of them right now. In fact, it's actually the form factor's making a comeback, people. But still, I mean, there's not a lot of nostalgia inherent in technology, functional nostalgia. You can still enjoy a Pixar movie no matter how old you are, no matter when it was produced. So I think that's going to be much more of a long-term thing for him. So it's going to be interesting to see. All right, now taking that and going into my love for graphic design, I actually found this wonderful concept, and it basically overlaid the golden rule on top of Apple's logo. Now, what I never understood was that not only is Apple's logo a design masterpiece in that it actually conforms to different aspects of the golden ratio just on one way, but it actually has two different different axes that the thing is actually sitting on, and it is a perfectly circumscribed circle. All of the curves and everything that you see in the logo are unbelievable. They're dead in there. Everything fits perfectly. So it is interesting, and you got to wonder. It's like, okay, was the original logo designed to be that perfect, or did the subsequent redesigns? Pardon me. Or did the subsequent redesigns actually slowly maneuver it in that direction? It's an interesting problem to have in logo design and any other kinds of bits of design, because there's never a point at which you say, you know what, I would like to do something that's absolutely perfect from the moment I set out. I'm going to have everything aligned. Everything's going to be top-notch. Everything is going to be 100% absolutely perfect, because there's no way you will ever complete anything if that's your idea. So it's beautiful to me to see something that is this perfectly designed, is this intricately interwoven, when it doesn't even look like there's a lot of stuff to line up, because it's the apple. It has like the apple with the bite out of it and then the little leaf sticking off the top. The fact that the leaf actually falls in line with other circles and other things that actually fall in there is unbelievable. So if you get a chance, you should head on over to Caffeination and actually eyeball the graphic, because it's really, really worth it. All right, now the next little bit of unbelievable artistic talent we found was actually an art student from Germany. His name is Benjamin Harif, and what he did is he actually took The Silmarillion, which is Tolkien's seminal work. It was actually compiled by his son Christopher, and it was released in the 70s after Tolkien died. And Tolkien didn't just write, he's also my favorite author, just, you know, putting it out there, but he didn't just write stories. So it's not just it's like, okay, so he wrote The Hobbit, or he wrote The Lord of the Rings, or he wrote all those different things. He wrote worlds and stories happened in them. He had functional languages for the different areas in his thing, and not only that, but as a scholar of languages, he had different dialects of the same languages that all had the same root, and they're all completely fake. Like, they have different elements from other languages, but they have the same grammatical structure. They have all of the same rules that apply to a normal language apply to these. So it's like, did he start with inventing a language and then build a story around that? Did he start with building a world and then figured out how that world would interact with the language, and then moved on to see what stories those languages would tell? There's so many different things, and there's so many different layers in there that I love getting lost in the world of Tolkien. And The Silmarillion, to me, is a much more interesting book than The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit combined. Now, the other two are better reads. I'm not going to lie to you. The Silmarillion is pretty dry stuff, but it is the living and breathing Middle Earth. It is from the mythology that created it. When we were talking similar to the Norse gods, I mean, Tolkien was a scholar of Nordic literature and everything. It's like some of his translations of some of the older bits of Norse culture are still considered quite seminal. But I mean, it's interesting to see when other people take on these things. And this Benjamin actually took for his senior thesis. It took him 6 months, but he illustrated The Silmarillion. And he didn't just illustrate it in, you know, like where he was just drawing pictures. And it's like, okay, you know, this is Gandalf coming onto the shores. This is the elves leaving for the Grey Havens or anything like that. No. What he did was he actually did it in calligraphy. And he did it in the same styles that Tolkien read. And it was noted that he read the same books on calligraphy. He was inspired and loved the different medieval calligraphy style. So it's like, you know, like the giant letters and things like that, and the intricate knot work that was present in Celtic work. And Benjamin actually went through and hand illustrated all of these, the entire Silmarillion. It took him 6 months. The text of the actual book, besides, you know, the letters and the larger plates and everything like that, is all printed on there. So it's not like he did it by hand, because he said it would have actually taken much, much longer. But, and, you know, whatever shortcuts you got to take to get this out there. This is the only edition of this in the world, because after he was done doing this, you know, actually, you know, scribing each page by hand, he then went and bound it on his own. So this was his senior thesis. I hope he got an A++, because when you look at some of these pages, it is unbelievable. This is a true love letter to the art of bookmaking, and it's a true love letter to the art of Tolkien, because, I mean, it's unbelievable. He's apparently been trying to get into contact with the Tolkien estate because he would like to release this to the world. Could you imagine paying a premium to actually get an art book of the Silmarillion, and it's all done in this style? I think, you know, with the amount of time and effort that he put into there, and the actual love and dedication that he showed to transcribing the Silmarillion to do what it was, is unbelievable. I really hope that the Tolkien Foundation sees this, and the more people who talk about this, I mean, hey, share this thing to all your friends if you're interested in this stuff. But the more people who see this stuff, the more traction it gets. Hopefully, the more, you know, the Tolkien estate will actually see it. Who knows? But, I mean, it's unbelievable. And this is the only problem with actually doing video the way that we are doing it, which is opposed to the kind of hack way that I used to. I used to actually be able to switch between different cameras and actually show you shots of the desktop. That doesn't work on this much more professional setup that we got going here. A little bit of video artifacts every now and then, but the overall build quality of the actual video is hopefully going to be a little bit better. All right, now the next little thing we have up there is Philly Invaded. I thought this was hilarious. I saw somebody actually doing Post-it notes Space Invaders on their windows on Tumblr. It was actually on a young lady's blog, insanelygamely.tumblr.com. And I said, you know what? I'm pretty sure from my perspective, from where I sit, I have a beautiful view of Center City, Philadelphia. And I'm pretty sure I could actually make a Space Invader out of Post-it notes, you know, like over lunch, and do it in like, you know, 2.5 minutes, and just waste like a little tiny packet of the small ones and make it look like it was attacking. So I did it, and it looks like the Space Invaders attack in Philadelphia. So if you'd like to see what that is, you can head on over to caffeination.com. It's pretty funny. It gained a lot of traction when I posted it on Tumblr, so I might have to do other pixel craft kind of things in my windows. I've had a lot of some of the students actually come in, they're looking at it and going, what's that? And then, you know, some of the faculty come in, you know, like mid to late 30s, and they look at it and go, oh my God, it's a Space Invader. That's fantastic. Now, the next little story that we got for you right here is, it's a story Steve wrote. It's called Celebrating Zelda with Gold. Now, if you have what appears to be $49.99, then you can get the Legend of Zelda 25th anniversary. It is a gold box, has a gold disc, everything is the normal way. However, if you spend an extra $20, you also get a gold Wiimote that has the Hyrule Crest on it. You know what? I'm going to do it. And I wonder what exactly they're going to do. So the Game Boy had, you know, Game Boy Gold. This is the Nintendo Gold cartridge. The only thing it was Legend of Zelda. So I think it's going to be really cool that they actually come out. Because the only box that's red right now, the only box that's not white, is Mario. So it's like the new Super Mario Brothers is red. And the powers that be at Nintendo said, you know, that's going to be the only red box. We're not going to make a habit of doing this. However, again, they broke canon for Zelda, and you know what? I think they were right in doing so. So it's going to be interesting. So it's interesting. I got to wonder exactly what's all on the game. So we'll see exactly what happens and how well it translates to the Wii platform. All right, now the next little thing we have for you here is I'm so excited about this. I really want to save up and buy one. It's called the Inkling. It is a digital pen system that you attach to your sketchbook. So you basically take your normal sketchbook, and I actually was going to have it here so I could show it on the video, and you clip this thing up at the top, and it's a sensor, and then you use their special pen, and the pen has pressure sensors so that as you draw whatever it is that you're going to draw on the page, it gets stored, all the data gets stored on the little clip that's up at the top of the page. Then you plug the clip into your laptop, your computer, whatever else, and all of your drawings show up on the computer. So, I mean, that's unbelievable. And it's one of the biggest problems that I have with doing sketches and making sure that everything looks correct is trying to get what I drew onto the computer with the same kind of level of detail without, you know, either whiting out the page too much or having something else happen that actually made it not a tenable option. So it's interesting to see, and I can't wait to actually try one. I want to see if we can get one in work because, I mean, could you imagine if they have a slightly larger one that's actually able to take like an Arch-D sized paper. I mean, we're talking, you know, it's like 36 inches wide by 24 inches tall. And If you can take that and actually clip like one of these up at the top and then do your drawing, not only are you hand drawing in architecture, but or art or whatever else you happen to do, but then you can plug it in and you actually get all of that feedback and all that time spent doing something like this onto that. So it's just really cool. I got to wonder what the size restrictions are on the paper. I mean, because could it work on an 8.5 by 11 sheet? Does it need to only be a small sketchbook? I mean, who knows? But, you know, it's $200, and you know what? For the amount of cool stuff that this thing could supposedly do, I would be willing to spend it if I had the money. All right, next little thing we got for you here is Majesco changes the game. Majesco is a company that is very famous for doing things like Zumba Fitness and Cooking Mama and other games for the Xbox Kinect. And what they're trying to do is their own take on Twister, except there's a couple different restrictions for what the Xbox Kinect can actually do. And as more games come out, I'm actually starting to realize what they are. It can only track one person at a time. So yeah, this is Twister without falling over your aunt, uncle, cousin, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, which can be fun, can also, you know, break a hip or something, but still. So there's no spinner, which I actually think is a little bit sad, because I mean, how cool would it be to have like a fake spinner up at the screen where you just spin and then it just goes, and then you know whatever it stops at, you have to try and do. So I don't know if it's going to be a shape you have to contort yourself into, so it's going to be like Spider-Man or something like that, or who knows. So the one picture that they actually have on the screen actually shows a guy in kind of a very Spider-Man-esque little situation going on there. So I'm not sure how it's going to work out. There's three different modes and 16 different ways to play the game. And it says you can have up to 8 players at a time. The only thing is they're not 8 people on the screen at a time. They're 8 people in succession. And if you've ever played Mario Party, where everybody's trying to do it in a row, it's real easy to fall asleep if you're the fourth player. So you're like, and nothing else is happening. It's late at night on Saturday. It would normally be fun if somebody would actually pick a lot more of the challenge games and everything, but everybody's playing individually. It just kind of gets boring. It's like hot seat at a computer. What do you do when you're not there playing the game? So it's fun. I can't wait to see some videos of it in the wild, I guess is what I would need to see. But yeah, we'll see exactly what happens. All right, and then the last thing we have here in the GeekCruft section at the Cafe Nation podcast is home from the start of a long, long journey. What I said basically is it's a little perspective. This is a beautiful picture that is actually taken from Juno. Juno is a spacecraft that was launched on August 5th. By August 26th, it took this snapshot. And if you look at it, it's just two dots. One dot's slightly larger and fuzzy and white, and the other dot is smaller, darker, and about, you know, maybe an inch and a half away. It's about an inch away from the other dot. The rest of it's pure black. And you're looking at it going, okay, so what is that? As Juno races off into the expanses of space, it took a picture of home. So it took a picture of the planet from farther away than anything else had ever been done before. So this is 3 billion kilometers. It took a snapshot of Earth from 10 million kilometers away. So this thing is already farther than any other picture has ever been taken of our planet. So everything you've ever done, everything you've ever experienced, and everything that you ever thought about all happened on that one tiny little white dot. It's a little perspective. And then when you actually look at the other dot, and that's the moon, and you're like, okay, wow. So to cross from point A to point B, it actually took 3 days in a spaceship. So back when, you know, Neil Armstrong, you know, threw down his foot and threw up his hand and did what he had to do, it that took 3 days to make happen. And putting aside all the R&D and everything else, you know, behind that, he launched 3 days before that. So there was a little bit of a delay. Could you imagine? You know, it's like, you know, kids hate the 3 o'clock bell in school because they're waiting for that to happen. This man had to wait 3 days to think about what he was going to do and if it even worked. So when you're looking at it, it's like, okay, so our farthest accomplishment is an inch away on this thing. There's nothing else in sight. That's it. Everything we've ever done, everything you can ever hope to be, is pretty much on that dot. So it kind of brings everything into a little bit of perspective, and I really kind of liked it. So it's from the Discover Magazine blog, so I had to share it with the rest of the group. All right, we're going to run down the food and caffeinated bits, and then we're going to head you out on your way. Hopefully you enjoyed you have enjoyed so far today's episode. Just remember, you can find everything over at caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. The live show is live.caffeination.com. But if you head on over there, there'll be a fun little embed as well, so you can see. But all right, now the first thing we have here is a Mario Pipe Dream mug. It's a green mug. It has a kind of a pipe form factor for the handle, and it's around 8 inches tall. So it's a pretty big, beefy stein of a mug. And for $35, you can get this limited edition Pixelcraft kind of mug. It's a real ceramic mug, and it actually comes with a coaster that's any one of four different coasters. The only problem is this Mario Pipe mug is kind of fighting against my inner feeling of budgetary restraint, so I'm not exactly sure that I can spend $35 on a mug, especially not when we already have a moratorium on mugs here in the Caffeination Lair, because I actually have a box of Scout mugs from my grandfather that I'm slowly starting to use now. So if I'm still using my grandfather's mugs, I don't have a lot of extra space for new mugs. So when I started this job that I have, you know, at Temple, you know, 8 years ago, I was like, oh, cool, new place for more mugs. So I took some of the mugs there, and, you know, I have my Father's Day mugs, my caffeine molecule mugs, and all that other fun stuff there. But, you know, it's this is a big mug. It's a lot of money. Probably not going to happen for me unless somebody decides to gift it to me. All right. Now, the next little thing we got for here is Coffee Uncovered. Is it a tool or a hobby? And I've talked a lot about this, and I think I might have even written other papers on this, but this is the first time I actually feel comfortable with what's out there. I coffee has to have two places in my life. One thing is it's my hobby. It's what I love. I love the taste of really good coffee. I love everything that goes into it. I love enjoying and understanding the difference between a Guatemalan and a Sumatran, the difference between a dry processed and a wet processed, how you can tell Costa Rican meal from other kinds of coffees because of, you know, what makes it an actual honey coffee. I mean, there's so many different things and there's so many different nuances in coffee that I get lost in it, and I love it. And I love enjoying a good cup of coffee when you can actually take a second and sit down and just sit there. And it's like, it's you, it's the mug, that's all that really matters. And then you have coffee as the tool, where I wake up in the morning and I need to have a cup of coffee to actually be a functional human being. It's like, yes, because I've had kids, I haven't had them, but, you know, it's like, because I was there and helped in the raising of two young chillins, it's, you know, forced me into the fact where it's like, you know, there's not always time for coffee. So you have to break the dependency where you can, but for me to function at an optimal level, I need coffee. It's just a flat-out certainty. Coffee has to be present in my life, and both from budgetary constraints and from time and pleasure constraints. If I'm going to drink coffee and I don't, and I know that I'm going to be rushed and I know it might end up getting cold, I'm not going to spend the money on good coffee. I'm going to spend the money on good hobby coffee or good tool coffee. So it's like, you know, I have the chock full of nuts because that's what I drink in work most of the time, unless I have really good stuff that came down the pike. And I have the good stuff for the weekends and at home, or when it's like, you know, the after dinner coffee where you can actually sit there and you can make an espresso, you can use the French press. If I'm using a drip, it's usually the tool coffee. So I'm curious as to how other people work it, because I mean, I use around a pound and a half of coffee a week, so that's a lot of coffee. And it can get crazy, can get a little dicey some weeks if we don't have enough coffee on hand. So how do you do it? Do you consider coffee as 100% a tool all the time? Are you a 100% tool all the time? Am I just a tool for talking about this? Who knows? All right, next little thing we got for you here is over at CUNYCODE.com. This is it's already finished up, but I have to point it out to you. This is 30 days of different cups. Now, what the process was and what the challenge was that these cups would take 1 day to design, and then through the use of 3D printing and rapid prototyping, they would make these cups available for sale. So from concept of it being a cup for coffee to final product had to take no less than 24 hours. So some of the interesting ones that are up there are actually like a little Demitasse glass with a statue, or not a statue, with a Eiffel Tower actually made into the cup itself, so you can pour all the coffee and everything that you want in there, and then you would actually drink because the Eiffel Tower is on the top. There's one with a honeycomb kind of finish on the outside. There's one that's just, it's just really cool. It's called the Kryptonite Cup, and it has crystal growths growing out of the side. Now, they're all white because they're 3D printed. And what it actually allows you to do is eventually you're going to be able to buy all these cups. I thought that was fantastic. I can't believe how cool it is, and I would really like to see exactly how this happened. But I love the idea, and I actually spent some time, went through there. There's really awesome chain link ones. There's knitted ones. There's the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy brown, lazy red dog. Quick red fox jumped over the lazy brown dog. See, that makes sense because there's not brown foxes, although they can be kind of a shade of brown, and there's not red dogs unless you're talking about Clifford, and then it'd be too big for to contain in that sentence. What's so important about that sentence, the quick red fox jumped over the lazy brown dog, is the fact that it uses every alphabet, every letter in the English language. So it's what you would type and learn how to type on a typewriter to make sure that all the keys worked. The more you know. All right, so as you're looking through all these fun different things, you can see, like, there's a cup and a cup. There's a cup that has a tea kettle on there. There's the Klein bottle cup. There's just so many different things. There's even a cup that has a nose on it. So I really spent a lot of time and went through all these, and they're just really kind of beautiful. And the idea behind some of these is that you should hopefully be able to buy it one day. So who knows? There's actually links to actually buying all the cups now, but none of them work, and I haven't been able to get them back for sale yet. So who knows what's going to happen with that. I still wanted to make sure that everybody knew. Now, I got to hand it to Mass over at ineedcoffee.com. He actually redid his home roaster color chart, and I gotta say, as much as I love the previous all-in-one shot of all the different beans where you could actually see the different things, this actually, he took the time and really made some beautiful images, and they're really a lot easier to kind of tell the difference between the different roast levels. And you can see all the way up to oily charcoal goodness down to a really light roast, kind of, just kissed with flame. So when you're looking for it, and as an amateur roaster, home roaster myself, and as somebody who spends a lot of time trying to do that kind of thing, this is an invaluable guide. Because as I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, I can understand this time. What I do is whenever I roast, I keep a journal. So I write down as much as I can about the description of how the beans came out, how long they actually spent in the popery that I use. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into it. So I can actually now take some of that data and compare it to these pictures and get a better idea of what roast level I was at. So that's good for me. All right, next little thing that we got for you here. This is my new favorite site online for right now. It's called dudefoods.com. It's beer battered deep fried lean pockets. Yes, somebody found a way to fix lean pockets. So what they do is they take some beer batter, they take the wonderful lean pockets, they dip it in the beer batter, and then they fry it in oil. I love this. The only thing that would make it even better and less lean and more pockety is if they wrapped it in bacon before they beer battered it and then they deep fried it, because that would just be unbelievably awesome. I'm just going to let the pictures do the talking because it is beautiful. And that's what you really need to do to actually make a lean pocket edible. Just letting you know. All right, next little thing we got for you here. Is there anything chocolate can't do? Apparently, it can now talk to Fritos, and they actually go out of the room as a kind of a couple. Yes, there's chocolate-covered Fritos now, and it's kind of done the same way that a chocolate-covered strawberry is, where it's not just a blob of chocolate. It's actually the tip of the Fritos is entirely done up in chocolate, so you can actually pick it up. Fritos happen to be one of my absolute favorite snack foods, and as somebody who's attempting to make sure he only eats good food, Fritos just ain't good food, but they look mighty good on that plate, and if there was a plate full of chocolate covered Fritos, I'm not even a big sweet person, but if there was a plate full of chocolate covered Fritos in front of me, I might be tempted to have a couple, because seriously, how often are you going to do that? And then the last little article that we got for you here is from Mike Crimmins over at thedailyshotofcoffee.com, and he put together a wonderful list of cold toddies. Now, despite my rant about the trials and tribulations of a coffee blogger during the summer, he found the one caveat to it. Coffee and alcohol always go well together. There is no thing. It's kind of like when my wife said, well, do we have enough bacon? I said, Jen, there's one sentence you need to understand. Then you will understand every piece of my motivation. There's no such thing as too much bacon. So now that we have that and you understand that there's no such thing as a bad coffee-flavored alcohol, we move along to the Bailey's Irish Cream and a whole bunch of other different cold concoctions to help get you through the summer. So if you have that, or if you're just looking for a little stress relief because school started and the kids are nuts, or school hasn't started and the kits are nuts, who knows what you're trying to do? You can head on over there and check out his recipes. I gotta love it. I'm not a huge fan of cream liqueurs overall, but you know, Bailey's is one of those ones where it's like, you know, okay, I think I can give that a shot. So I just wanted to send that out there because I really think there's a lot of people now who could use a good stiff drink. All right, and as somebody who's spent the better part of, 40 minutes again talking his face off, I think I'm just about done. There's only so much one can say in any given time before people start to roll their eyes, and I'm already rolling mine for you. All right, so thank you ever so much for listening to the Caffeination number 499. Again, another Caffeination classic. Steve will be with us next week, and you can be with us too if you stop by live.caffeination.com, and you too can be part of the 500th episode Bonanza. Who knows what we're going to end up calling it? I got to think of a good name. All right. Thank you ever so much for listening. If you're looking for any comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, anything you'd like to do, please fire it off to caffeination@gmail.com. You can always call into our listener line and leave a direct audio comment. That's 215-240-1319. That's direct to voicemail line. Or you can, twitter.com/caffeination. We have a Facebook fan page. There's so many different submissions and different things and different ways you can go about doing this that you really don't have an excuse. If you enjoy the show or you think we're just funny or you think we should probably stop at 500 and quit while we're ahead, or at least, you know, moderately below sea level, then, you know, please feel free to drop that too. So thank you ever so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.